and our team. I was going to talk about this new model that I think is a fabulous book, Pax Americana, Exposing the American Empire. I'm really annoyed that I keep reading from this. I have some cards here. There is an event in modern times and some of the contributors, myself, Freddie G. Norman, Barbara Eckstein, Emmanuel Wallenstein, and Frank Allen for the Modern Frenchwood Party for the 6th, and Elizabeth Letitia Martinez for the Insulin Boston. I wanted to talk about imperialism and the effects it has on our lives, our daily lives, and the origins of the United States and the genocide against Native peoples. But I just returned last night from 2 weeks in Geneva, Switzerland at the UN Convention on Human Rights, the United Nations Convention on Human Rights. And it's a big burden on me. It's 2 weeks of very intensive work with a group of very traditional Native Americans from US and Canada and Central America. Native peoples have been working at the United Nations now for almost 30 years, since Ruby D. of 1973, trying to get the treaties recognized in international law and lands, self-determination, acknowledgement in the UN. It's had its ups and downs. We've actually been able to do quite a bit of building a structure, infrastructure in the UN. But now the United States is proposing to pretty much wipe out the entire division of human rights in which all of the indigenous initiatives. It actually makes us a little paranoid, but it actually seems like we're going to do that, try to do that just to get that issue out of discussions at the United Nations. Well, after 9 days of listening to the United States headed delegation as a right-wing senator, Republican senator from Minnesota named Rudy Bocovich, something like that, and he began each of his statements with the phrase, "I've been a friend of the Bush family for 30 years. But I told Rebecca Solnit that she put 30 years is plenty of time to be considered a war criminal, a friend of the Bush family." So he was bragging each time, not even really related to the meeting that was taking place. He's supposed to send experts on human rights. He was bragging about democracy breaking out all over the world because of the invasion of Iraq. Mind you, this was during the week of the 2-week anniversary of that invasion. And so I signed up to give a 3-minute intervention, which is all they allow non-governmental groups, under gross violations of human rights. And I want to read to you what I said. The Indigenous World Association is a UN-affiliated non-governmental organization that I direct. It's been around since 1981. And we work close conjunction with the International Indian Treaty Council. So, here's my intervention. The Indigenous World Association speaks on the question of the violation of human rights and fundamental freedoms today with a heavy heart. 2 years ago, the United States Armed Forces invaded Iraq, a country already disarmed and starved. With the use of what it called shock and awe, the U.S. administration believed it could crush the spirit of the Iraqi people, as well as the overwhelming majority of the world's peoples and governments that opposed the invasion, thereby creating a new reality on the ground. despite continued Iraqi resistance and mass opposition inside and outside the USA, to a certain extent, might have won out over rights. Shamefully, this Commission on Human Rights has not condemned the illegal invasion and the bloody occupation that includes systematic torture and cruel and inhuman treatment of detainees. The survivors of the indigenous peoples of North America who were invaded and colonized by the United States are cognizant of the roots of the United States' current behavior in the world. The U.S. military uses the term Indian country to refer to enemy territory, for instance, in Fallujah and other areas of Iraq not yet pacified. This term illustrates the origins of U.S. militarism. However, violence is only one weapon in the U.S. arsenal in its quest for world domination and its genocide against the poor peoples of the world. So-called democracy is its most pernicious weapon. By democracy, the United States means elections and majority rule, not the right to food or to housing or employment or literacy or quality education or to water or to any other collective human right that gives meaning to a functional democracy. The reality of national elections in the United States is that only with hundreds of millions of dollars is a candidate able to launch a campaign for office. The majority of eligible voters do not register to vote, and among those who do register, the majority don't vote. That is because the candidates, in order to gain the required funds, must reflect the corporate elite's dominance and offer absolutely nothing to the voters. In every election where there is a choice for allowed to vote for none of the candidates, that choice would prevail. In fact, in not registering or voting, the majority is expressing its negative view of the candidates and the system. This is the system the United States is invading and intervening in other countries to impose. And if those countries don't accept the system, they are likely to be invaded or occupied. As one Native leader has said, Indians are prisoners of democracy. Well, very rarely is there applause in the UN, but that there was applause for this very loud applause for this small statement. People seem to regard me as some sort of isolated person who came there to speak against the United States. And I think that's very sad that you get very little news about any resistance here in the United States. I found that also at a seminar I helped organize while there on Iraq, where I was the only U.S. citizen there. And again, I was treated that way. I felt very uncomfortable because it does reflect that we are being perceived as simply approving of this. Well, I wanted to leave about 10 minutes for discussion. I'll mention again this event. And tomorrow night, also, a spotlight on anarchist women at City Lights Books, 5 p.m. down in North Beach. If any of you are still here and can come, or locals who can come. Sharon Presley has just published a book on equality and declare of her writings. And Lucy Parsons' book, which was published, which I wrote an afterword. The two of us will be reading a bit and discussing anarchist women, which I'm hoping the next anarchist book fair will be on the theme of anarchist women, and it will be more than
Sorry, I have a question. And it is a memoir, I mean, that is my experience, but actually it's been renamed from what I've been calling, it's now called Blood on the Border.
It's tricky, but
it's gone through a lot of names. It's very interesting to do with publishers and names. They didn't like my name Margaret, which I thought was very meaningful. Or almost any other name I came up with. I find it just too low.
Could you comment on the current events regarding the drilling in the Alaska National Wildlife Refuge?
You know, I was among the people I was walking with on the indigenous issue at the UN was an Alaskan colleague who was breeding yourself. It's of course so ridiculous. It's almost intentionally for this administration to say, yes, we can do this. Because it's compared to the cost, it's really insignificant in terms of the oil produced. But even if it were an emergency, there are other ways oil is going to run out of the world, but right now they have a huge stockpile of it and are hoarding it with the U.S. oil company. But that's economically unnecessary. It's not economically unfeasible. Not to even speak of the environment. So it almost seems as if it's a political intent is to challenge and undercut both the Alaskan Native and the environmental movements. And just because it can be done, and be forced upon them to then opening a gate to offshore oil production, which we'll probably see being forced upon us in California and all around the coast. The Gulf Coast is already a mess. So it's absolutely devastating to be even to in the short term. That's a really good question. It was certainly uppermost in my mind there, the meeting that always is with the very traditional, big natural and I guess the traditional people. Really, I think the work I've been guided to do by them at the UN is challenging state power. It's really saying, okay, this organization of states exists, but you're artificial states. You're not real. You're not nations. You're not peoples. We are peoples. And we are not political entities as much as people who belong to the earth. And I formally fell in love with anarchism at a very young age because my grandfather was a Guadalupe. And my father's name is Warrior Haywood Scarberry Pettigrew Dunbar. Named after the IWW founders. So I grew up with that. I grew up in rural Oklahoma, where that's really one of the radical political tradition. So it's very much in me. But I think it does seem as though the indigenous peoples and nations are trying to establish themselves as states by going to the UN, but they really are. They're challenging the state and the idea that the nature of the state, because for every one of them, the state is their unit. The state is what has put them where they are, and the state is what has allowed corporations to come in. The state is truly, purely their enemy in every case. So it's kind of, seems like a contradiction, but I actually think it's an extremely important movement for us to see. I think that's it.